Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to your latest edition of the Great Canadian Songbook. We're coming at you today with the last of our first round, and of course, joining me as always, my friend Keegan.
Hello, I am here.
Yes, you are. That's for certain. Good call. So we've come through our first round of preliminaries. So you would think, based on the way like you would picture a bracket, we'd be moving on to like our semifinals or whatever. But looking forward, we're gonna be introducing some new bands still. But this is kind of the first of our maybe we'll call it the buy-ins or something. I don't really know how brackets work. I'm just saying things, and then everyone's nodding ahead and going, "Yes, yes, very smart, very smart."
Yes, indeed, I agree. Mm-hmm, very intelligent.
Yeah. Anyways, this is, I'm trying to think of anything to say other than just diving in, but I think, you know, if we don't have anything to say, we might as well just hop right in.
Yes, right into the Jackson Wells show.
Yeah. Well, we're going to start off with a toughie here, because our first matchup today is Jean Leloup's L'Amour et Sans Pitié 1990 album and Celine Dion's Falling Into You, her 1996 album. So I think we can start off with Jean here, and believe it or not, I was scouring the internet for information on this dude, and there is very little I can find other than he made a couple lists, and it's the reason he's on here. So my kind of maybe history of both him and the album will be much briefer than usual, but I did find a couple interesting factoids about him to share. So we're starting off with Leloup was born in Sainte-Foy, Quebec, believe it or not, in 1961. He actually grew up most of his life in the two North African countries, Togo and Algeria, which I thought was kind of interesting. But he returned to Canada in 1976, so math, whatever age he is there in your head, and began performing a lot of music locally, obviously in like the Montreal area, because that's where it's happening in Quebec, making his waves. And the biggest fact I could find about him is his song 1990, which is a bonus track off of the album we'll be looking at. He compares the high-tech actions of Operation Desert Storm to sexual activities with his girlfriends. That's that's literally the only fact I have on him. My only other note I have is, this guy is a ghost. This is too hard. I'm moving on to Celine Dion.
Okay, good. Yep.
So in terms of actual information on the album, I don't have a ton. The only place I could really find information is a lot of French language websites. And I do not speak French. I can kind of read French a little bit. Not enough to form any comprehensive analysis on anyone's works. Basically, all I've got is this album came out in 1990, and it was from the Quebecois label Audiogram. So, and then also it was recorded in Quebec. Couldn't figure out where, but it's a mixture of me guessing and making assumptions. So, yeah, I guess this one is probably our most unknown album on the list, especially if you can't tell by the way I'm talking about it and probably the way you're like, hey, what is he talking about? So maybe we can dive into kind of the contents. I guess I can give a little bit of background. It's, if you haven't listened to it, it's kind of like early 90s alternative rock album is probably the way I'd describe it the best. But it's like partially in French, partially in English, but it definitely feels very Quebecois, which is definitely a part of our kind of criteria when describing Canadian albums. Keegan, do you want to maybe tackle this one first?
Well, I just want to like, I wonder if the him not really being present, I guess, on an internet presence, on an internet level, do you think, I want to look at this issue, do you think that it's because he's a French artist in Canada, or is it just because he's just a mysterious being?
I think it's definitely a mixture of the two, because of the few kind of things, like on his Wikipedia page, it says he's known for his colorful personality and unique media style. So I think that's part of it. I think it's definitely because he's a Quebecois artist who didn't really break much into both the rest of Canada, like the album we're discussing this week is his most successful Canadian album, certainly, and but like he doesn't really branch out into like English speaking Canada very much. So yeah, he definitely is lacking in that front, which I could probably talk longer than I want to about like Quebecois representation in media and like Francophone culture. But it definitely is an aspect in my opinion of the way he's kind of maybe not as well known. And this was another something I tried to intentionally include is a Quebecois only artist. Like we also have Celine Dion in here, but like, I think she's probably the exception to the rule of French Canadian artists, particularly ones who speak in French, because we will also be talking later about Simple Plan, who originated in Quebec, but I would say that they don't have much connection to that place. But yeah, so I guess that's maybe my take on how hard it is to figure anything out about this guy. Yeah, so I guess maybe one more note I will make. When I'm doing these kind of my research, at least, I look mostly only up until this specific album that we're talking about, and generally we're talking about earlier albums and kind of early stuff. But yeah, I guess in terms of this album, L'Amour est Saint Pete, it was his like only major hit outside of Quebec and was like released in the rest of Canada, France, Netherlands, Belgium, and Japan. So that kind of lead me to believe that it's potential that some of his other stuff hasn't even been released outside of Quebec in terms of distribution deals and stuff like that. He's on a Quebecois label. So yeah, that might definitely play a part in it. But I think content wise, at least for me, I think it actually sounded pretty interesting. And I think it certainly sounds like an early 90s alt rock album. He's a little like strange when he sings, which I think is certainly makes it more interesting. But yeah, like there's a couple actual tracks that I actually kind of liked. Obviously, I listened more, but like could understand more of his more English stuff. But I think he's actually kind of freaky, a little witty in his lyricism, and I think it sounds pretty good. Like it's got like a little bit of like an edge to it. I enjoyed it. I think it's like okay. I enjoyed it. What do you think?
Well, I was gonna ask what you'd compare it to. Like if you had to think of another artist or a sound even to compare it to, would there be anything, or is it kind of in its own world?
I would say he's maybe a bit more of a rockier Tom Waits would maybe be my comparison to him.
Okay, cool. That's cool. I obviously didn't get to delve into him as much, but I can kind of see what you're talking about. Although the Tom Waits comparison just kind of makes me laugh, because when I think of Tom Waits, I just think of that unique like just style, and I'm just like
he's cool. A little bit more traditional rocker, but yeah, this one was a weird one. I listened to it earlier over the weekend, and then I listened to it again this afternoon while I was kind of doing some like work and stuff, and I thought it's interesting. I think it's hard to maybe talk about it in like the lexicon of French language music, because that's obviously way over my head. But I think like in terms of an entry in a list of Canadian music, I think it's a good one, because traditionally, if you're listening to kind of like this location of music, you're listening to like your Celine Dion's, and you find things get maybe a little more in my head I call Celine Dion soap opera music, and that's kind of the thing that comes to mind, like powerful kind of like voices singing ballads. And this is an interesting, like I could see myself like you go to Montreal and you go to a good place and like he's playing on the radio or he's performing there potentially, at least maybe during his time. I don't know much about what the man's been up to since. But yeah, I think this one, nothing stands out to it too much about me. Like, in my head, I can't pick apart like a couple songs that I thought really were standouts. Honestly, I think 1999 is kind of a wild song, but it's actually like part of the re-extended edition of the album, so it doesn't even really count as an album track. But yeah, I don't think I have too much more to say about the album other than I'm happy we included it, but I will probably never listen to it again.
Yeah, that's probably a good summation of it. Yes.
Yeah, but in a twist of fate here, we've included both of our kind of Quebecois stars of the list going up against each other in the first round. And our next album that we'll be talking about this week is Celine Dion's 1996 album, Falling Into You. I actually dug into a little bit of Celine Dion's history that I didn't know about, that I didn't dig too much into it, but it made me question a couple things about her career. So I'll start at the beginning though. She's born in Charlemagne, Quebec, which is like a suburb outside of Montreal, in 1968. And she recorded her debut album at 13 years old. So very impressive start. And I don't know if I'm going to say this and like everyone's going to know exactly what I'm talking about, and I'm going to be the one who's surprised, but her manager at the time, I forgot to pull up his name. His name is Rene Angelil, who is his manager at this time. When she started, went on to be her later husband, who passed away recently. And sure, you can meet your husband young, but he certainly wasn't young when he met her. And I'm not contextually it makes more sense, but when I say that she was 13 and he was like in his 30s, that sounds pretty wild. I guess that's all I'll say about that.
It's a little dicey. I'll give you that. It's yeah. There's some room for
You know what? Error. I'm just gonna say it. Maybe. It's bad.
It's kind of bad. The optics aren't good, folks.
She also, one of the other things I pulled out here was that at 18 she decided that she like really wanted to be a star, and he said that she should change her appearance and helped her get dental work and plastic surgery and sent her off to like English school. Sounds like grooming to me. Was it or not? I don't know. But anyways, Celine Dion, super successful music artist. I'm not going to go through her whole discography up until Falling Into You. Because Falling Into You is actually pretty deep into her career, which, you know, makes sense since she started at 13. Yeah, so she started off kind of recording a lot of French language albums in Quebec, then eventually kind of broke out more internationally, where she's recorded pretty consistently a mixture of English and French albums, which I thought was interesting. You'd think once you kind of go, you don't go back, but I guess you can't leave home. Anyways, so Falling Into You, her 1996 album, was recorded at the height of her career. Like, people are going off about Celine Dion. Like, she is massive at this point. It's her fourth English language album. It was recorded both in LA and New York City, kind of mixture, for Columbia, Epic, and Epic Records, two pretty large American record labels. Doing a lot of reading on like the personnel of this album, and it's pretty big. She worked with 14 different producers of varying degrees, and a variety of different songwriters and musicians. Dion's like her only role kind of in the album is as a vocalist, but obviously it's her album. One of my kind of pulls I made for myself, I could have pulled off any of the more active producers, but one of them is Roy Batan, otherwise known as the Professor, who is the pianist for the E Street Band, Bruce Springsteen's backing band. Big fan of Bruce Springsteen, so shout out to the Professor. This album is just massive. It's won album of the year at the Grammys, won all the awards, one of the greatest selling albums of all time, has sold over 34 million copies. Like, this thing is huge. Surprise, Celine Dion is a massive famous musician. And another note, my last note is that it's 67 minutes. So shout out to you, Celine, for doing that. You really recorded a long album. And there's some long tracks on this album too. Like, the opener's 7 minutes. You certainly have some thoughts on Celine Dion and her music. I would love to hear them.
I recognize that Celine Dion is a great Canadian musician. I think that she is probably one of the shining lights for Canadian music in an international scene. I would say with Celine Dion, like, I'd put her in the same category as Shania Twain, like maybe your Rush, maybe even like to some extent your Drake or even The Weeknd, which we're going to talk about a little bit later on, in that they're very popular people worldwide in terms of Canadian artists. Like, everybody kind of knows who they are. With regards to the music itself, I can appreciate why some folks might like the music. For me, I'm listening to it and I'm just picturing Jack and Rose on the Titanic.
I specifically sent you a message this weekend saying Celine Dion reminds me of my grandma's house, and I mean that in all the best and worst ways. But I'll let you finish your thought.
No, but it's a good point. Like, I can see why it did well. I can see why she has the appeal that she does, particularly in the demographic of probably 50 to 80 year olds. And I'm saying that sarcastically. Like, her music is good. It's not that it's not good. I found it to be, the talent's there. The production's certainly there. It sounds great record. Sounds awesome. Musically, for me personally, based on my music inclinations, this was probably one of the harder ones for me to listen to so far. From a takeaway, from an outside perspective, I do think it is a good album. Like, I think it's good. I just personally am not a huge fan of her work. Although Out of Ashes for Deadpool was very good. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah, I think for me, I had a mixture of, like, this is such a weird one, because, like, obviously this album is great. So I'm just going to speak for me and preface all my thoughts with that. For me, it was like a mixture of, I was impressed, but also disappointed. I was kind of hoping that this would be my, like, cause, like, I knew kind of going in, like, Celine Dion, she's like a great vocalist. I was hoping she would kind of hook me with her actual, like an album of hers, as opposed to just like the popular singles. And in some ways I was like listening to a couple songs and like, I think the first track, which I said jokingly was 7 minutes long, is a bad thing. I was like, oh yeah, like she's kind of got it. And I was like, even as it went on, I was like, okay, like she's really good, but there's something coming together. And like certain tracks, I'm like really digging the song. I'm just like, oh, this is okay. All By Myself, obviously a classic. I'm trying to balance my thoughts, because I think this is actually like, she's a great artist, I think. And I think this album is really good. It's obviously like not my kind of music, not for me, but listening, I think it's the way I would put it is, listening to this album, I listen to it and I go, this is really good, she's amazing. But I will never listen to this again.
Well, and that's just it. Like, supremely talented, like nobody can deny that. Like, Celine Dion, that the range, her voice, amazing, amazing, amazing stuff. Like, looking at it from like an objective point of view, I think that's important to be like, wow, objectively, this is a great sounding record. But on the subjective level, I'm just like, ah, just not my type of thing that I would listen to, while still recognizing that it's an amazing record. The important distinction, I think
it's also really interesting, just like, in my head, Celine Dion's always big, but like in like at this era, like I was reading some of the stuff of like, this thing was like insane, huge, like the award she won, the sales, but also just like culturally, like this, she was like the greatest artist when this album came out, like most popular, most successful, everyone knew her. It's wild to think. And like, I just double checked, so I was fairly confident that about this, but there's a couple songs here that are actually like English adaptions of songs from some of her French language albums.
Okay.
So if that's what it takes is a, I was going to say the names. I'm just not going to do it. They're direct translations. I Don't Know and Fly are all English translations of her French or French songs from, I believe, her previous album. So like, it's kind of interesting that, you know, the way she kind of changes what she does. I'd be interested to go back and listen to the French versions of those. And honestly, it'd be interesting to see, like, because obviously this thing is like a huge industry kind of production with like a massive list of like American producers and writers and stuff. Be interested to see how like it sounds when she records in French. Like, does she record in Quebec? Does she record in like her house or something? I should have looked it up, but I'm curious.
No, it's a good point too, and I think it's kind of similar to what we were talking about with Buffy St. Marie too. Like, when she was kind of reimagining her songs all these years later, maybe not in the same way, maybe not in a different language, but, you know, taking something you've already done and redoing it a different way. There's something in that, you know, like being able to do that. There's some sort of artistry that, you know, being able to take something you've done one way and then doing it in a whole different way. It's pretty good. It's especially with language, being able to convert language into a song.
Yeah,
you know, the structure of sentences, even the way you sing things, it's just, it would be so different, right? So definitely some props in that itself. Yeah, for sure.
I wish English audiences were more receptive to anything other than English, I guess is the way to put it, because I don't know, I feel like, you know, this was made in this original way. And obviously people liked it in English. Productions may be different, but I feel like people should hopefully give her a chance in French. I think maybe I will, just out of curiosity, with a couple songs.
Yeah, why not? See what the other side of the table has to offer, you know?
Yeah. I think, I guess, maybe getting down to it, I think even since we maybe stated that this wasn't our favorite, I still think it's definitely like way better than the La Loupe album. And it's obviously like, I think even in regards to me, not even me being like, oh, well, obviously the Celine Dion album's better, but like in terms of me actually sitting down and listening to it, I do think I enjoy listening to this better than the other one. So unless you have any maybe critiques or disagreements, we can accept that state.
Yeah, no, I like I said, I didn't delve too much into the La Loupe album, but I can probably get the sense that if an album is like one of the best selling albums of all time up against something that's relatively unknown, there might be some subjective artistry in that, where you go, well, this one's a better album, it just didn't get the recognition it deserves. I think I'm with you though. You know, in this case, I think it's pretty pretty cut and dry. I think Celine's probably the French queen that moves on, you know?
Yeah, yes, indeed. She definitely is. So yeah, there you have it. Celine, she lives to fight another day. I'm sure she's glad to have our approval. Yeah, so I guess we'll transition into the second half of the show, our second matchup, where we've got Simple Plan's debut album, No Pads, No Helmets, Just Balls, and The Weeknd's kind of debut album, Trilogy, but we'll get there. I when you're technically researching three albums, it's a lot harder.
I'm so sorry.
No, that's not what I meant. I actually enjoyed it. I thought it was very interesting. This may sound lame, or it may sound good considering we're doing it, but I actually really like reading up on the different artists and learning a little bit about them, especially the ones I don't know as much.
Yeah,
which would include our first, Simple Plan, their 2002 debut album, No Pads, No Helmet, Just Balls. I think this might be our first in a while of, no, I'm wrong. Blue Rodeo is a band, but we've had a lot of single artists recently.
Yeah,
so obviously the history is a little more diverse, and I'm not going to dive into everyone's life, A, because it's just not out there, and B, I don't want to. So
fair.
Simple Plan is, I was not surprised, but like, I thought it was interesting to find out that all founding members of Simple Plan are still with the band. We've got Pierre Vouvard on lead vocals, Chuck Cuomo on drums and percussion, Justinko on lead guitar, Sebastian Lefebvre, so many French voice names.
Lefebvre, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. On rhythm guitar, and David DeRessios on bass, who is technically on hiatus, but I assume that means he's coming back at some point. My guess is he had like a baby or medical issues or something. I don't know. Maybe you know.
Yeah. Well, actually, I saw them when they played the Last Warped Tour. I think it was last year. Whenever the Last Warped Tour was, show in Toronto. And they actually had a their photographer guy filling in on bass. So I think it's probably just like a medical thing where he's off. And just a quick aside, just for fun, their photographer, yeah. I actually had met him in England when he was doing photography for a Mike Shinoda of Linkin Park show in 2019. I ran into him in fucking Camden, UK. And so when I saw him up on the stage in Toronto, I'm just like, this is the weirdest shit I've ever seen in my life. So it's just a weird aside. So that's why.
Anyway, that's great. That kind of plays into a little bit of the Simple Plan ethos from what I've discovered. Yeah, so Simple Plan was formed in 1999, which I thought was a little interesting that it took them kind of maybe 3 years to debut an album, especially back then. Like, it's a lot easier now. You can just pump out singles for as long as you want. But yeah. Anyways, so yeah, it's formed by that group. Basically, everyone's from Montreal. They started there, but that's kind of where their history with Montreal ends as far as like coming up. They played a lot of like small punk scenes, mostly in like Toronto area. And then they did like, they've played like Warped Tour for basically every single one. If you went to Warped Tour, you probably saw Simple Plans at some point. But yeah, that's kind of their early thing. So we'll hop into, I'm just going to call it No Pads, or I could call it Just Balls, but I think I'll go No Pads.
Just Balls.
So No Pads was released in 2002, as I said, for Atlantic Records. You know, congrats to them for getting signed to Atlantic before they debut an album. That's pretty impressive. It was recorded in Toronto, New York, and LA. So, and it was produced by Arnold Lanny, and fans of the show will know that Lanny produced the first four Our Lady Peace albums. So a little bit of history there, both in the Canadian music scene as well as in our show. This album received a lot of comparisons to basically any other pop punk band that was out at the time, most notably Blink-182, probably because they were the most popular and easiest to compare. But listening to it, you can definitely hear it. Like, definitely not an unfounded comparison. And this album was actually reviewed, like, mixed to negatively by critics. A lot of people were calling it kind of like derivative, like pop punk, which I guess is for us to decide in a couple minutes. But commercially, it was very popular. It went to, I believe, number like 36 or something on the US charts, but number one in Canada. And that's kind of actually something that's a little bit persistent with the band, which I thought was interesting to mention. And I will note the first song on the album does feature Mark Hoppus on it. So that's part of where you might see the Blink-182 comparisons coming in, because he's literally on it, or not, yeah. Mr. Blink himself, but one of the members of the band. Yeah.
Like, basically though.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that's kind of a Simple Plan up to No Pads. Simple Plan, probably most notably known for doing the theme song to What's New Scooby-Doo, which is an amazing song in its own right, I will say. Also, I'm Just a Kid was really popular on TikTok in the past couple months, so good for them on that. But anyways, just tell me that it's great. This album's great. You can just do it.
Oh, you already know what I want to say about this album. Actually, and the funny thing I just thought of, this is the second Canadian band that we've talked about that has done a theme song for an extremely popular show. What is with that? Bare Naked Ladies.
Oh yeah, of course.
What is with Canadian bands and liking theme songs? I don't know. Is there something to that? I don't know.
Interesting.
Interesting.
They need the money. They're Canadian.
They need the money. They are Canadian. That's a good point. Yeah, no, I don't have to really lie too much here. I can probably speak to the album straight up. I love this record. It's whiny pop punk, and God knows I love my whiny pop punk. Yeah, interesting that it took so long for the album to come out. I thought that was interesting that, you know, behind the scenes there was a lot of maybe tension with the producer. He really wanted Pierre to sound a little more whiny, which is what he did and then kind of later regretted. But it does give some uniqueness to the album. This is kind of at the time when Tom DeLonge of Blink was getting whinier, because he wasn't really whiny before. He just kind of sucked at singing. And then 1999, Enema of the State came along, in 2001, Take Off Your Pants and Jacket. So this album is heavily a Take Off Your Pants and Jacket, not rip off, I'll say, but a build on, from Blink 182. Good Charlotte getting popular around this time as well. Very, very heavily built on that. When I was a kid, I listened to I'd Do Anything all the time before I was a Blink fan. And then when I became a Blink fan and realized that I was listening to a song with Mark Hoppus on it all this time, I was extremely upset at myself. But, you know, great record. I love most of the songs on this album. You know, I'd Do Anything, Worst Day Ever, I'm Just a Kid, When I'm With You, Addicted, Perfect. Like, half this album are certified Canadian radio bangers. Like, you've heard these on the radio at one point or another. To be honest, the rest of their work after this kind of sucked. They had some good ones, like When I'm Gone from 2008, very good song. They had that Jet Lag song with Natasha Bedingfield or whatever.
What's New Scooby-Doo?
So they've had some good ones, but as an album, they really hit it out of the park. I think that for a Canadian album, and especially a pop punk band in Canada, considering we only really have two, we have Simple Plan and we have Sum 41, which are arguably more punk than they are pop. But you know, regardless, I'm going to just get down to it. It's a great record. It's a great sounding record. It does sound amazing, regardless if you hate Pierre's voice or not. It's a really, really good sounding record. Very ambitious record, but they were definitely capitalizing on the appeal of the time. So Jackson, I want to get your thoughts.
I think, one of this album's biggest strengths is On the Dial. At times it leans more towards pop than it does to punk. And I think that that's, like, to its credit, I'm not saying that as like as like their sellouts or anything, which is maybe an opinion people maybe have. Selling out isn't so bad. Don't clip that or anything for future reference. But yeah, I think this one for me, this is like, this is kind of in my pocket of what I wanted, what I like about pop punk. It's like just like a little angry enough for me to get a little angry, but just kind of like fun enough for me to, maybe not for me to dance to, but for one to dance to.
I could dance to it, Jackson Wells. I could dance to it.
I could, whether or not I will is the question. But yeah, like you've heard I'm Just a Kid. Like you've even heard, like, even I was surprised, like I know and I've listened to Simple Plan, but even like stuff like Addicted and like I'd Do Anything, I was like, oh yeah, I've like heard this and enjoyed this already. So yeah, I thought that was like really, really interesting. I really loved, I actually really, really enjoyed this album. I think this is one of those albums that will, if it hasn't already, will definitely kind of go into my like rotating wheel of like pop punk albums that I'm like listening to when that's the vibe. Yeah. It's so fun and it's like just light enough to not really like, you don't listen to it and you're like, oh man, society, am I right? Like it's really got me down. It's like just light enough where you can kind of like come out of it feeling good. I will say when I was doing kind of, I generally listen to all four albums kind of in the same day. That's just kind of how I spend my weeks. And I listened to this one right after Celine Dion and it was a very interesting comparison point. I thought it was fun for me, but yeah, I quite enjoy this one a lot. I think, even some of the deeper cuts that like maybe aren't as high caliber as the hits are like just kind of good listens in general.
Yeah, and that's the thing. There's nothing that I don't think, like, unless you really hate his voice, I think there's nothing that really turns you off the record. You know, if you're listening to it, it's on in the background. I don't think you're really going to complain. It's just kind of like nice feel good music. Like if you're driving, it's just kind of nice music to have on, just kind of fun hanging out. I don't think that there's anything that really, really pulls someone away saying, you know, this is not really a good record. I think the instrumentation is great. I think the vocals are great. I think the lyrics are actually surprisingly really, really good too. And so on the whole, like I would say objectively, I don't think there's anything that would really dissuade anybody from listening to the record.
I think we talk about great Canadian albums. These are certainly, this album is very indistinguishable when we compare it to its contemporary American contemporaries. It's like indistinguishable. Maybe to its, in terms of as a Canadian, maybe to its credit, maybe to its detriment. But it's certainly like a shining example of Canadians can do it too.
Yeah, sure. I think that's a good way to put it, actually. Because, I mean, you put this on and then you put a Blink-182 album on, you're just going to think they're both American pop punk bands. Like really, you know? So
yeah. Yeah, like it's good. I like it. Good. I think we can maybe move on to our final album of the week.
Woo!
All right. So our final album of the week, let me refresh my notes, is The Weeknd's Trilogy. And so yeah, this one's kind of an interesting one to think about. I will say interesting choice on our part, but we'll get to that later. But The Weeknd is not everyone's favorite time of the week. It's Abel Tesfaye is his given name. I'm probably, when I talk about it, going to bounce between Abel and Weeknd when I describe the album, so prepare for that. He was born in 1990 in Toronto. He is the son of Ethiopian immigrants. In terms of his like history before Trilogy, like this is really early on in his like career and life, so he doesn't have a ton. But I think I only bring this stuff up because I think it's relevant to his music. He dropped out of high school and then proceeded to like consume a lot of drugs, like not just a lot of like a few drugs, but a lot of many drugs based on like what I read, which I wouldn't mention as like something significant, like people can do whatever they want. But I think it definitely plays out thematically and maybe instrumentally in his music. Yeah, we'll get to that. And he began his recording career in 2010, anonymously uploading songs to YouTube. So in a way, him and Justin Bieber are of the same class. That was my joke for the week.
Intriguing. No, I thought the Weeknd joke was actually pretty good about not being the favorite time of the week. That had me for about 10 seconds just in shambles. So that was good.
Yeah, so Trilogy is The Weeknd, is both a compilation album and his debut album. I guess that maybe comes down to messaging and marketing for who you are. But what Trilogy is it's a compilation of Tesfaye's first three, or Tesfaye, I'm just gonna say Abel. I like Abel better. I also don't want to butcher his last name. Of Abel's first three mixtapes, House of Balloons, Thursday, and Echoes of Silence, which were first released for free online as like digital mixtapes, and then through his own label XO, which he founded for someone who's creating their independent music. You very early on to found a record label, very respectful. It's mostly just his music, but that's certainly a way in this modern age to control your own music as much as possible. So shout out to that. I thought that was an interesting part. In terms of production, it was interesting because this is technically three albums. And so the first one is a little more varied, but is mostly produced by Canadian producers. Let me just quickly pull up their names. Don McKinney and Ilan Jago, which is obviously a pseudonym. But there's like a couple other ones on there. But the following two albums, so Thursday is 100% produced by McKinley and Ilan Jago together. And then Echoes of Silence is mostly produced by Ilan Jago with a couple other guest production spots. And then writing, Abel's credited as writer for all of them. And then there's like, depending on who's producing and like a couple other names, there's a couple other people on there. But it's a surprisingly restrained list of cooks in the kitchen for both the length of the project as well as kind of the stylings of what he's doing in his music. And I guess in terms of my final notes on the album before we talk about it, the record was also recorded 100% in Toronto at Dreamhouse, Sights Downed, and Sterling Road Studios, which is, you know, local boy, keeping it at home. And this album was reviewed very positively. A couple of people I was reading, which I think is maybe a fair comparison, called a little self-indulgent to release all three of your mixtapes as an album, which we can maybe talk about. But obviously, the content of the albums was reviewed very well. And as everyone knows, The Weeknd is like one of the most successful artists, if not of all time, at least currently. So obviously, it successfully launched his career into producing more straightforward albums, is maybe the best way to put it. Trilogy, The Weeknd. What are your thoughts on this, Keegan?
I was very pleasantly surprised by this. I have never disliked The Weeknd. I've never like I just haven't. Like, it's always been, if it comes on, I'm like, okay, I'm not gonna turn it off. But I distinctly remember 2015 when it was A Beauty Behind the Madness came out. That's 2015.
That's the time.
And after that, like, just blew up. Like Canadian music became The Weeknd and Drake. Mm-hmm. And those were the only two things that, like, anybody listened to for the past 5 years to probably the current day. Mm-hmm. I never really got into him. I think I had a bias against him because everybody else liked him. So I'm like, nah, I'm not going to like it. Yeah. But I had this on at work today, and then I was putting it on just while I was studying. Very, very, very good little record. And when I say little record, I mean like almost 3 hours record. But, you know, I was really surprised the production quality. Oh my God. It sounds amazing. It sounds like it was, you know, like refined and had all these producers and had this big record label behind it. It's just the guy's mixtapes produced by like two dudes. And like, that's wild to me. They sound so good. You know, usually this isn't my type of thing, is what I tell myself. But I very, very strong. I thought the songwriting on a couple of them, like I think it was Wicked Games, What You Need, very, very, very impressive to me. I didn't have a gripe with this album at all. I thought it was really, really, really well done, and I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, for me, this was maybe a daunting task for us, and I definitely acknowledge that, but I think this was the right choice. I think The Weeknd was probably always going to be on here. I think this was the right choice for us to review in terms of what the mission of the show is as regards to Canadian albums and getting into like the actual content of it. I think for me, the only thing I'll say about the runtime of this is I wish it was shorter, only in the sense that I wish I could have re-listened to it more to like really dig into it. Like, I'm sure there's some tracks you can cut, but I do respect the, to steal a term from Simple Plan, the balls to release this as kind of your debut to the world. Of course, like Wicked Game is obviously, I think, in my opinion, like the single from like his early career, is probably one of his first biggest songs. I don't want to say shout out to him for getting the Drake feature, because I imagine that probably wasn't the hardest. The man loves his Canadian music. And this was also early enough in Drake's career where he wasn't a god yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even like stuff like The Birds, Part One and Part Two, I thought was really interesting. Like thematically, like it's not just, he's not like The Weeknd. A lot of people could maybe consider him, or at least maybe that's projecting. I sometimes consider him as just like, the guy he's just putting out club hits. That's it. And there's certainly club hits on here, and not like club hits, but like after the club is like closes hits, maybe as the after party hits. But stuff on here, like he's like actually like really like an interesting songwriter. And the production, I think, really strongly complements his style of both singing and songwriting. I think it's honestly like a really impressive thing. And there is something, it's always hard for me to tell if something feels Canadian because I know he's Canadian, or if it's because I grew up kind of inundated with it, and through osmosis I'm like, this is just Canadian culture, Nick's grew up, or if there is something about it. And to that I will say that I don't think we'll ever truly know what it is, but maybe it, because it makes me feel that way, it is that way in some, like, there's the circular logic is like, there's no way to truly decide what's what. I think just for fun, I think House of Balloons is the best like standalone EP, or not EP, yeah, mixtape here. That's just my guess. I don't know. It's all good. I think maybe it would have been easier to comprehensively like pick something like Beauty Behind the Madness or even Kissland from his earlier stuff. I will say, I think After Hours is one of the best albums this year. I think that's a great like synth R&B rap album. I actually really like that album.
Yeah, we kind of talked about that. I think maybe in the first week, how like that 80s revival, mm-hmm, that synth driven thing, he fucking rocked it. Like, oh my god, like really really good. Mm-hmm. And again, this is coming from a not fan. Like, you know, it, mm-hmm, really really strong, really really good album. After I was damn.
Yeah. He was robbed at the Grammys, but the Grammys is all weird politics, and not in like capital P politics, but like behind the scenes politics. We don't have to get into that. I think this is like, it's so interesting to me too. Like, even double looking at like how many hands were in here. Like,
yeah,
it's pretty minimal. Like, he's credited in all the songs as writing it, and production like writing to me is like, I think in terms of like music and like specifically rap culture, I think anyone who's like in the booth that day gets a writer's credit. So I don't put as strong emphasis on like, oh, 8 people wrote the song. I was like, well, I feel like it was mostly the 2, and people kind of bounce ideas back and forth. That's how crediting works in my experiences in the world, like the way I've seen it play out. But like, production, I think, is where it comes in of like hands-on stuff, and like it's really like stripped down, and I think that's 100% to the album's credits. I think it makes things really cohesive, and that's why especially these 3 kind of acts, I guess, to this album trilogy flow together so well, is that it's a, like, it sets up a really strong kind of bass discography for The Weeknd. And man, this is also I feel like the best thing about this album is that it's listenable both in like maybe a studying or a work setting, but also when you're going out, this is what you're listening to, and it's kind of flexible in that weird way.
Yeah, and I mean, props to him for being able to encapsulate that in multiple different ways. That's a feat in itself, I think, like being able to put something in like a multiple capacity thing. Like, I'll make a comparison just so you know how ridiculous it might sound otherwise. But like, if I was to put Bon Iver on while I'm studying, that's great. If I put Bon Iver on at a party, someone would probably be very upset at me. You know, but if you had this album on while you're studying, or if you had it while you're at a party or a pre or whatever it might be, I think it's still going to vibe well, and it's still going to...
It's versatile.
Yeah. That's just it. It's versatile. And I mean, good on the guy for being able to do that and bet on himself to put 2.5 hours worth of music out, and to really go for it. I think that's, you know, super impressive. And he deserves all the credit for that.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I will say, like, my last point is actually not about the album specifically. I think it's interesting. I'm just kind of double checking his discography here. I was curious. And like, the man kind of didn't miss both critically and commercially, and in terms of, in my eyes, like I think Starboy I didn't like as much, but like, it still got some really great songs on it. The man is consistent, and I feel like I haven't given him the due that he's deserved.
And that's what I was just thinking too, like I said before, I haven't really paid attention to him much, and I kind of just was like, The Weeknd, everybody listens to him, I'm not gonna listen to him because I'm a music snob and I know better. I don't know better, and he's actually very good and very talented. And to be honest with you, I think I'll appreciate this more than his other stuff, because I think there's something in the earlier works that usually get to me more. Like, it's the same way for Dylan, it's the same way for this. Like, most of the artists, they just, in those earlier works, they have something more genuine to say, or even to sound like, and I always am more attached to that. So we'll see.
It's the debut album's curse and credit, where artists spend all these years, like their first years of their musical career, like writing music and performing it live, and then when they finally get into like the booth to record it, they've been working on it for like years of their lives, and this is finally their break to produce it, and then what do?
Well, that's just it, right?
That's like, why I think I think a lot of the bands and albums that we've included on this list are pretty early outings for them, with a few exceptions. Which, like, even like I want to go back and kind of look and see how many like debuts and like second or third albums we've got for people. I think there's definitely something to that that you touched on.
Yeah, for sure. And hey, like I said, like being able to do that, like whether it's The Weeknd or anybody else, if you're able to encapsulate like that thing, and I can never touch on what that thing is, but if you've got it in that first album, you're set, you know. And if you're able to just do the thing, you're just gonna be able to make it. And I think that's what, you know, he really demonstrates here. Like, if you listen to this and then you see where he's at 8 years later, you're like, yeah, that makes sense. You know, it's like, I can see how he got to this place.
Well, I feel like maybe we've talked about it enough. We might have to decide here. I am a little shocked between both myself and you. I think it's a little closer than I thought it was going to be.
I'm going to be honest. I'm thinking it's going to be a lot closer than I thought it would be too. And that's me going into it. I'm like, easy. And then after me listening to both of them, I'm like, maybe not so easy. So I want to know your thoughts first, because I think you might actually be surprised at mine.
I think, going in, I have an inclination towards both these genres of music. So I knew I was probably going to like The Weeknd stuff, and I knew I was going to like Simple Plan, but I think looking at them, I think my final decision, which is close, is I think I'm gonna land on The Weeknd on this one. There's something it's just something feels special about it that I wasn't expecting going in. It just feels like, I feel like I'm sitting there in the studio on like a leather couch, and like there's like blue LED lights on or something like that. That's just, I can just feel it while I'm listening to the music, and like it takes me to a place that feels really good. And honestly, I want to give it like negatives on like, it's too long, why did they do this? But when you listen to the whole thing, I like enjoy it the whole time. And maybe like not all the songs 100% stick out, but like that's rare for any album. But it holds my attention for the whole time I'm listening to it. So yeah, I think that's where I'm going to land.
You know, it's funny that the way you're describing it is kind of the way I've been thinking about it too. And like, I'm not apologetic about it. I love Simple Plan. I love that record. Love, love, love it. I think it's very good. Is it original? I don't know. I don't think so. I wouldn't consider myself an expert in the genre, but however, I do have a Blink-182 tattoo on my forearm.
Close enough.
I feel like I might be able to say something about it. You know, I think what they did with that record was very important for Canadian bands to be able to say, hey, I can do this too. And I think it was important for them, because they became a force in their own right. It doesn't break new ground. It kind of just jumped on the bandwagon of what was, going on. Not to say that they're not talented, not to say that they're not important, but they were just doing the thing that everybody else was doing. I think with The Weeknd and with Trilogy, you have a very original take on something that maybe the style wasn't as popular at that point, 2010, 2012, give or take. But you had something that felt original. It felt honest. It felt like it was coming from a place of, this is what I want to sound like. This is what I'm going to sound like. And you can see that. You can see how that evolved up until 2020. And you can see how that's still there. I think that's important. I think the sound of the record is important. It's just really good. And the fact that this guy bet on himself and put out this massive thing, and he has Drake on his first two records, and he's, you know, it's nothing to balk at. And I mean, to some extent, you could say that was Simple Plan too. Like, they got Mark Hoppus and what's his name from Good Charlotte on their first record. Like, that's nothing to put down either. But in the Canadian context, being able to go at it and do it just because you think you can do it, and doing it in this manner where you're kind of cryptic and you're not really front of the scenes, you're just kind of behind the scenes doing your thing, that means something. And I think that means something more for Canadian music. And so, as much as I love my Simple Plan and my Pierre Bouvier, I am also going with The Weeknd on this one. And frankly, after thinking about it more, I don't think it's as close as I thought it was in my head. Yeah. I think it's actually more of a gap for different reasons.
It's interesting too to think, we talk about the big Drake feature, but Take Care came out in 2011.
Yeah.
Which is a year after this, the same year as this. And it's like, Drake wasn't the name that we think he is back then. But at the same time, I think rap and even like generally hip hop now, like everyone sounds like Drake or The Weeknd, like all the popular stuff. Not to sound like snob or anything, but like, it's interesting to think that these two, who kind of came up at the same time, have kind of really defined the genre for at least the previous decade. We'll see going forward. And honestly, like, I didn't even really think about that until I looked at Drake's like Take Care, which we're going to talk about in the coming, maybe not the coming weeks, but at some point we will talk about it. And how like that's still like kind of around the same time, like the 2010s. When I think about like popular like music in this genre, it's honestly Drake and The Weeknd, and they're two Canadians.
Well, hell, to even get into like more about that, like, you throw in Justin Bieber into that mix too, and you've got like I would argue half of pop music for the entire decade of the 2010s. Justin Bieber, The Weeknd, and Drake. Tell me they're not featured on like almost every pop song that you've heard in the past 10 years.
Yeah.
I think there's something to be said, no matter how much I despise most of their music, between Justin Bieber and, actually, that's a lie. I do kind of like that Justin Bieber's record from what was the one? It was really good. I hate admitting it, but I'm going to look it up for the sake of me just rambling, and I just want to talk about it. Purpose 2015 is second last record.
Oh yeah, Purpose isn't too bad.
That was a damn good record. Mm-hmm. And those songs were everywhere. And then you look at Drake and you have Take Care, but then Views was 2016.
Yeah.
Is that they really defined the decade. Mm-hmm. And regardless of how much American influence or pop influence or whatever you want to call it, and we'll talk more about this when we get to Drake. But you look at The Weeknd, you look at Drake, you look at Justin Bieber, and you go, man, those guys have been around for a while, haven't they? And they haven't. It's like been 12 years.
Which, in terms of like a lot of these bands, is like nothing. It's really impressive. Like, I think we're not quite there yet, but I think soon we can start talking about the 2010s in music. And I think when we, as in like the royal we, do that, I think Drake and The Weeknd are like at the top. And for our purposes this week, The Weeknd is one of those people at the top. And I would say, even as we did talk like previously about kind of like this like synth kind of 80s revival revolution of music, 2010, and it's not 100% there, it's still kind of a little more slower, more R&B, but like you can start to see it in even this, his first album. Like, I think it's really not until I sat down and listened to the whole thing, read a little bit about it, and started talking about it that I realized how influential this album is, even in like a shorter time span than, say, Leonard Cohen's influence, which he has a little bit more time to reflect on that.
Yeah, but I think the fact that it's more recent too gives you a better perspective on it too.
Yeah.
Like you can understand how the music got there or where it came from. You know, when you're listening to let's talk about Leonard Cohen. When you're listening to Leonard Cohen from 1971, you might not be able to connect with that as much just because that was, oh God, what, if I can do math here, that was 27 years before I was born. That was 29 years before you were born.
I think so.
Something like that.
I was
like,
born in 1999.
Yeah. Okay. So there, okay. So 26. Yeah. Whatever math. But like, if you look at it like that, you can't connect with that. Whereas something that came out in 2012, you're like, oh yeah, I was doing this in 2012. And I remember hearing this when it came out, and you know, kind of how that evolved. Maybe there's something in that. I don't know. Maybe that's something that we'll talk about more, but I think there's something to that. That's important for this too.
I think that's a good way to put it. And I also think that's probably a good note to end the discussion on. So our Man the Weekend trilogy beats out Simple Plans. And you know what? I think that was a worthy kind of challenge there. And I think that's it for our kind of first round of the brackets. So the way kind of the next round is going to work is we're going to be introducing what we decided was kind of our like buy albums in terms of Canadian albums. So coming up in the next round, you're going to see The Tragically Hip, Alanis Morissette, Drake, Rush, Neil Young, Bryan Adams, The Band, and not Alexis on Fire, Arcade Fire. they always get me there. So yeah, we're starting the next round, but there's still going to be some new albums to check out. And we'll explore, I guess maybe after that round, what our format's gonna look like. But we've got weeks to bank to think to push that back, if we're being honest.
Yes, we do. And I mean, this is the last episode before the break, isn't it? Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So yeah.
Merry Christmas, happy holidays to people who are listening. It's gonna be hopefully a good cap off to this crazy year.
The Weekend Christmas album, when I feel like you know, he might put a different spin on it, maybe a sexier spin on Christmas.
Ooh,
ooh, if that's what you're looking for.
I mean, if that's what you want, then I mean the niche is there.
Yeah. Right? So looking forward into the new year, I'm gonna speak out of turn here because I can't remember exactly how we formatted it, but our first episode in the new year, you'll definitely be hearing us comparing Pup's Morbid Stuff and The Tragically Hip's Fully Completely. And you will potentially, I can't remember, be hearing us talking about Wheatfield Soul by The Guess Who going up against Alanis Morissette's Jagged Little Pill. But regardless, you will definitely be listening to some, we'll be bringing in the new year with the hip.
I'm excited. Which, that's, honestly, yeah, that's the way I would want to bring in any new year anyways.
I'm really excited because not to blow up my spot a little bit, but I'm not... the most, not into is not the term, familiar with the hip's work. So I'm excited to really dive in. Because that's one of those bands that I've like pushed back listening to. Like, oh, I'll listen to them at some point. And you know what? Here we are. The perfect excuse. And it might be the perfect excuse for you, dear loyal listeners. So get excited to listen to some new stuff. We've kind of, I think we've maybe outdone our hidden gems on the list. So get excited to listen to some big stuff. I'm gonna say of our next eight, I think the biggest hidden gem for people will be the band's music from Big Pink is gonna be my guess. A little older, but the band rocks. So get excited for that. For our film fans, check out The Last Waltz, directed by Martin Scorsese, which is a live filmed concert of their final kind of concert as a band. Fun fact about that, because I'm just going to ramble on for like 30 more seconds. Martin Scorsese had to, I guess not digitally at the time, in some way edit out Neil Young's cocaine drip out of his nose in that film, because it is very visible apparently in the original cut. So yeah, get excited to listen to the band in 6 weeks.
Yay, and, cocaine!
And Merry Christmas, I guess. Happy holidays, and O Canada.
O Canada, we'll see you next time.